up, got gas in Ocala, and I had wiped my car off last night, and it was just covered with a fine sandy dust this morning again. And I said, where did all this come from? He said, oh, it's just in the air all the time. Is this what I'm breathing in Florida? But I was surprised, having cleaned it up, to find out how quickly it accumulated again. Whew. Now can I wash my hands? I realized yesterday that arm had been in the sun all day, and I realized even more just in the 25 miles coming up here. This is a really painful.
Your towel's in your room, John.
Did you see your towel? It's on top of the TV, over by the door.
You can hang it on any knob and find.
You wanted to talk and vice versa. And this is a conversation of some of the things that went on around you. I have four of the silliest late teenagers. Last time I went to Matheson Hammett, that conversation I should have recorded it. Done for an entertainment. All their boyfriends, all their girlfriends, all their parents. Before I had two New York businessmen. They were there about an hour, I guess, the same time I was. And there was no conversation except high finance the whole time. They agreed with the stock market and everything else in the financial world. Murder mysteries, and everybody was getting poisoned.
Which one were you reading?
Well, I got to one that I hadn't read before, which is a bunch of short stories in the Teeth of the Evidence or something of this sort. Lord Peter was just in the first two, and then the other detective, but I hadn't read one of these in a long, long time. And then I picked up the some kind of poison.
Strong poison.
Let's see. Why don't you read up there, David,
okay.
And let Johnny, and we'll have Rick. Rick? John? Put you on the corner.
I gonna eat standing up?
He has a chair.
Yeah.
And we usually, this is where we have the news, John. It saves us.
That's the way my sister and her husband do, too. And when they get coffee and they forget to turn on the news, that's a real tragedy. Going on in the world for the next 24 hours.
Sometimes I think it saves you a lot.
That was my
fan, well,
too.
Good, God, he has that fan.
Well,
yeah.
I see you. I can try to put it over there. I don't think it's anybody.
Y'all go ahead. Don't want
your shoes chewed up?
Yeah, that's right. Come on, John. Let's see what this is like.
Yeah.
Let's
see whether this is strong poison or not.
Yeah.
You got it going the right way. We'll pull Debbie's hair right into it.
I noticed that the windows in John's room are still, sealed.
Locked and barred.
We'll have to get your air.
Yeah, we'll have to
fill up the little crack somewhere.
Yeah.
I could raise those windows, you know, but they got the putty in them, so they...
You better just leave them. You might have to put putty back in them.
You reckon? I hope not. April, they can frost in April. Easter, we have maybe Easter?
Yeah.
Some time ago?
Easter, some time ago, last year.
It's always chilly.
Yeah, I remember being in the middle of the state, man. It was too cold to swim.
I don't know if it was early or late.
That was Easter.
We don't have much light, see?
So John can see, that's all.
I'm doing fine.
Well, I'd like to see John.
No problem. Old and withered as he is.
John. Not to say that.
Feeling all of my retirement years.
Well, if you don't mind, I'll just get my breath.
Worn out putting up the fan.
Those cows kind of get you going sometimes.
Yeah, there's so much cussing going on in that. You see, you can't just use plain language with them. They don't seem to respond to it.
Have you taught your helpers that kind of too?
Yes.
Three of you to China.
Well, it's not
not an anvil
much
forest.
Progress with that.
A lot of effort.
Mostly example.
Well, so long as the cows understand, that's the important thing.
Yeah, I'll tell you. They are more eager going in than they are coming out.
Mm-hmm. They know what's ahead of them.
Well, they got a stomach full. Yeah.
They went running back down the lane, though.
Oh, did they?
Yes.
They want some water.
They must have. Seeing that pail up there, it kind of seems to spur them on down the lane.
What's that?
An old Pappy's feeding bucket, water bucket.
Yeah.
And it's upside down. So they didn't get a drink this time.
Oh, no. No, I cured them of that.
You turned it upside down, did you?
Sure did.
Well, you said the worst jams there.
Mm-hmm.
They'd go out the gate and turn around and come back in.
I just love to jam it.
You've no idea how much a cow can do to make you mad, John. When she takes it on herself to do it.
How about horses, Debbie?
Mm-hmm. Well.
Are they perverse critters, too?
Sometimes.
I can't answer for horses, John. They're not my bailiwick. All they do is step on me and bite me.
No fond memories at all.
And I don't get behind them.
I don't either.
Now, are they really likely to kick out if they know that somebody is behind them? Is this characteristic? I was reading a story where somebody walked behind a horse and somebody else yanked her away and said, "You stupid fool, you know a horse will kick if he realizes somebody's there but doesn't know how or what." I'd never heard that before.
Well, they might if they don't know you're there and they just hear something back there.
Just as a matter of just a reaction to
they get surprised.
It's a good idea to let them know where you are.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can tell you about a cow. You say a cow don't kick.
This is what's her name? Cow did
apparently. But I've seen one of those cows. How are they running about those cows? Oh, they're running their little thing.
Yeah.
You got your boots on. Go out there and knock the fire out of them.
Just,
speak to them. Let's just speak to them. Tell them to behave. They're wearing the cow.
He doesn't make pets of them, but he, you know, he has just a few. And he thinks they all understand him when he speaks to them. And you know, darn if I don't think they do, baby. It's the tone of voice.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow, I put too much juice in this stuff at the last minute. I thought he didn't have enough juice.
Mine seems to be just right.
John, you just...
It's been a long time since I've eaten a meal cooked by you.
I don't know that I ever did, John. You always ate with us, and John cooked it. Now, in any case, that was different.
I was trying to find out from Roscoe what he had told me about this New Year with Minnie Kate, and I had a very confused idea of what was going on. I think she's older than I am, so she could have retired. But she's not.
They tell me she's perfectly stunning looking. Perfectly white hair.
That's not to. No more.
No.
Baby.
No pain for her.
She's apparently not teaching these first two terms, and she hadn't made up her mind the last they heard whether she was going to teach the third term or not. And if she did, then she's going to have to make up her mind whether to retire permanently at the end of the year or not. It's all very confusing, it seems to me. All very tentative, anyway.
Well, one of the last things I heard about her, she was coming to Sevierville, of all places.
You know, she had gone to Henry's to see whether she could stand living in Sevierville. Not only
I can't imagine many kids in
Sevierville. Socially, but economically, apparently, too. This was a problem.
Yeah, I can maybe imagine her living... I don't know, in the mountains, I don't know. But I still think when you retire, you ought to go to the heart of Manhattan. Like the
stars.
Our friends did.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's all right, only it's sort of expensive. I used to go to New York, say, 3 weeks in the summertime. This was routine while I was teaching in Tennessee. And I got down to 2 weeks. Now it's a week, and I can't wait for the week to be over. Well, I had relatives and friends around.
Anybody has an oldest
Duke? No more for me, thanks, Faye.
Yeah,
I'm
fine,
Faye. Most of them are gone now, so this makes a difference, too.
We heard some.
Mission accomplished.
I think they're running the baby calf, and I think they're all just running and having a time. Good time.
Just enjoying it.
And you went out to stop them. Aren't you a nasty?
Oh, Lord. Why didn't somebody go ahead and eat my bean? Save me the trouble. I haven't got the energy.
Probably should have gone to my dentist, and I had my teeth all done over. Well, this is one of my projects this winter. And he wants me on a strictly protein diet. I'm to have protein 3 times a day. And I said to him, I'm a salad and dessert man. And he said, that's just your trouble. So I had a scrambled egg for breakfast this morning, much against my wish.
What do you want?
Toast and coffee.
Oh, what do you want to do? Little toast, you don't need little toast?
I'm used to my orange juice and toast and coffee routine, and when I have to have bacon and eggs and so forth, I'm unhappy.
You just had a scrambled egg?
Well, the toast and coffee.
But this protein 3 times a day.
Yeah. He wants me to have an egg every morning. I haven't had an egg every morning for years.
Oh, what do you have? You just have... Orange juice.
Orange juice, toast, and coffee. It's breakfast.
Sure.
And he said, that's not enough.
Oh, I see. So you can have that. But you want the egg too.
Yeah, yes, I've got to have that, but I've got to have the protein too.
Well, it ought to be somewhere you could just stick it in your pocket then.
That's not going to cure what ails me.
John, is it because of your teeth?
Yes, he said this is my teeth show a lack of protein in the diet.
One thing you could do, you know, is change dentists.
I'd have to try to pay this one what I have.
What'd you pay him?
Plenty.
We have some dentists too.
Oh. Well, I'll tell you what I paid mine. I paid him $125 for a crown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you see, I have now what amounts to 15 crowns. He took out everything that was in. This is a new the Panky process, Panky Foundation process. They're not really crowns. They just cap everything. They go in with little pegs. And I don't chew on my own teeth anymore at all. Back here, I'm chewing on gold and platinum and palladium.
I apologize for this dinner. Put on such luster.
Well, he tells me I should never lose another tooth. There's no reason for my anything decaying further or anything abscessing further. He's removed all the dead tissue, which he says is what causes abscesses. I never knew this before. Did you know why you got an abscess in your tooth?
No.
Well, he says it's dead tissue.
In your tooth?
In your gum. And this produces the bacteria which runs into abscesses. Nobody had ever told you that before.
Yeah. Well.
So I'm biting on all whatever I got now. 27. Yeah. I'm missing one.
Well, now I don't want to leave this thing up there. Am I to understand that you've got $125 in every one of them?
Just about. Mm-hmm.
More or less.
More or less. What can you get for gold and platinum and palladium?
Well, I didn't get any gold or platinum in mine.
My brother-in-law was very indignant. He said, what in hell are they putting in gold for? He said, gold doesn't wear at all. And I said, well, I don't know. This is what it is. So I asked when I went after my first visit over to Santa Bella, I got this cross-examination. And the platinum is to dull the color so that it doesn't have that shiny gold quality. And palladium apparently is an old-time dental amalgam, which hardens whatever other ingredients are involved with it.
Wow.
The Tonga Islands put out palladium coins a couple of years ago. They're quite big fellows, and they sell for about $200 or $300 each. So I could see why mine were costing me what they did.
You see, we talk to Miss Mary, and she tells us the price of everything right off, John. So we're not used to these civilized ways of withholding information, you see.
Well, that's getting everything on the board.
I had we didn't get it all on the board. It wasn't part of it. Let me tell you, I got a plate, upper plate, and sometimes I can chew on it, and sometimes it hurts. And he looked at it, and he says, how long have you had that in? I says, 1950, the Korean War. Well, he says, it don't fit.
You said, I know it.
I said, I know this, Devin, and I'd have to carry it in my pocket. Well, he says he could do something about that. So he's finishing up on that crown one day, and I said to him, do you have any idea sort of the price would be? I've been a little short out there with extra expense. Oh, he says. Now that's to make it all the teeth are out, you see, and just put another upper plate in. They cost $50 over in South Carolina. You know that place over there? Huh? That's where they're going to take the teeth out one day and put the others in the next. $80 maybe. Oh, he says, $400, $425, depending on what extras you want.
Peppermint flavor.
And you know, for the longest time, I went around pricing upper plates after the teeth was out. And I didn't find anything that run that high.
Mm-hmm.
One of my office mates up there just had a new plate put in. One of the high price, didn't it? Cost him $150. You think he misunderstood me?
Maybe.
$400, $425, depending on what was the question, whether
the extras.
Whether you want something fancy, maybe that would.
That's right. It depends on how fancy you want it.
Now, Dr. Bagman says that there is no reason for anybody ever talking about dentures in the future. This is something that will date you. That if your teeth are caught in time, the process, you know, can save them. And they said there's no reason why I should lose the tooth further. I had lost two, and he put two in there. Very nicely put in there, hinged on the two on the side, so that they have a full pattern now, and they don't come out. No problem.
Yeah.
But my sister was very much taken with this. She's been trying to have my brother-in-law do something, and Charles has not spent that kind of money. No, unless she can bash him over the head and make him say yes when he's not really sure that he knows what he's saying. But she had been in contact with some doctor in Fort Myers who had said the same thing. When I went in, I lost a gold filling when I got down there, and I had to go and have it put in. And he said, well, your mouth is in really very unhappy condition. And I said, well, my own dentist, my own doctor tells me this. I know I've got to have something done about having plates done. Oh, he nearly hit the ceiling. Don't say that word. Don't ever talk about dentures. You don't ever have to have them again. And he said, if you catch in time, he said, mine should have been done 10 years ago. But if you catch people in time, he said, I can fix cases worse than yours and guarantee that you'll have no further problem. We'll see. Being brand new. He said to me the last time I was in, doesn't your mouth really feel much better? I said, well, he said, now come on, it doesn't it? And I said, well, you know, I got so used to the old mouth, and I haven't got used to the new one yet. It didn't make him very happy. Well, that's the saga of my teeth. Now let's get on to something respectable.
Well, I'm just thinking I hadn't had any. Well, what else do you know? I didn't know anything about that, and I'm pleased to know.
Well, I am too, John.
This is the Panky Foundation problem. He told me that.
Well, you can get all.
I should have these things checked up in 6 months just to make sure that the bite has stayed. Sure, now that I'm striking on all 27, and there are no doctors nearer Galesburg than Springfield, which is 150 miles, and St. Louis, which is 200 miles. So he's given me the names of the doctor in both those places and does this technique.
Wait a minute now.
He told me a horrible story. He taught, he's just a young fellow, only 31, and he taught for a year after he graduated from dental school at the University of Illinois and gave up teaching because he said the alumni were interfering with these new processes that he was trying to teach the students, and they wouldn't have it any longer. They didn't want these innovations made. And he said, I wasn't about to fight the dental alumni. I just got out. He had a very funny thing happen.
I don't see how you could hold that down. He just put it in the Reader's Digest.
There are four doctors in the clinic, four dentists, and I was to have a week in between sessions. I had 6 4-hour sessions plus about 6 or 8 single hour ones. And I was to have a week off. He was going out.
Six, how many hours?
4 hours, 8 to 12 or 1 to 5.
Do you hear that, Faye?
Yeah.
Well, it wouldn't take me over 30 minutes.
They took all kinds of plates and all kinds of x-rays. They did the things over and over again. Well, anyway, I was to have this week off because he was going out to Denver. And then his secretary telephoned and said, could I come in on Monday? And I said, well, if I could. And when I got there, I said to him, I got to talk to her. I said, I thought the doctor was going to be away this week, and I was going to have a week free. And she said, well, we all thought that. But the second doctor in command had gone up to Gatlinburg for a dental conference. He was going to explain this technique. They have panel discussions of this all over the country, apparently, now. And after the man had delivered his lecture and demonstration of this technique, they had taken him out skiing up one of the ski lifts in Gatlinburg. And I did not see this in the paper, but I heard it over the radio. They kept it out of the Miami papers, apparently. The ski lift broke in going up the mountain, and it dumped 8, I think it was, out of this. Nobody was killed, but Dr. Dolan landed on both arms, 50 feet on solid ice, and broke both wrists, so that he was out of business altogether, and the other two doctors, the other two younger doctors, had had to take over his patients, so that Dr. Begeman hadn't got to go to Denver as he had anticipated.
Don't tell me things like that, don't you? Just tell me good things. I got the news.
Well, when Dr. Begeman told me this, I said, well, I heard that over the radio. Well, I heard that. And he said, well, where did you hear it? He said, it wasn't in any of the local papers. And I said, well, I must have heard it over the radio. And then I wouldn't have paid any attention to it, I expect, only that I knew Gatlinburg, and the name struck me, and there was an accident there.
Yeah.
We were in Gatlinburg last summer, and oh, what a change from the good old days.
Bumper to bumper.
Oh, unbelievable. When I remember the first time I was there in the fall of 34, we went up Christmas shopping for wooden things. There was this one little crooked dirt road with these old shacks on both sides. We went up the mountainside someplace to some fellow who had a lathe and turned these wooden, I bought some wooden plates that year, and turned these out. And when we came back down, it was Thanksgiving, it was cold as heck. We wanted to get something hot. And there was one old country store there with a great big belly stove in the middle of it, and there were four or five of us. And we went in this store to see whether we could get something hot there. And there were four or five local yokels around the pot belly. And they all just moved right back against the wall. And all the time we were in that store, we got some hot chocolate, I remember, for some reason or other. There wasn't a word of conversation among these people. Now, whether they thought we were revenue agents or just suspicious foreigners, I don't know. But it was dead silence all the time we were there.
Yeah.
That was Gatlinburg, 1934.
Yeah.
Ed did a lot of recording up in those mountain hideouts there, too, in those years.
You
did? No, Ed did.
Ed did.
Bringing back these things, and Mary was setting them up, translating the musical, and there were some they were singing these folk songs.
I catch what you were saying.
Mrs. Kirkland then would transcribe the song into the musical notation. Dr. Kirkland had recorded the words, and he was getting some things which were, I remember Ed saying, closer to the Elizabethan originals than anything that anybody had recorded anyplace else. But there were many times when, you probably remember some of these too, Faith, where you would get these people started on the songs and they'd get to giggling and they couldn't stop giggling, they'd just giggle, 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 and you'd have to give up. They were so embarrassed they couldn't go on.
Did you keep up with Ed's collecting?
No.
I didn't either. I wish I had.
Well, I had to listen to enough. I should have been more knowledgeable and more concerned than I ever was.
That's it. If I could have thought of it at the time.
I'm gonna have some sugar for my coffee. Some sugar.
You got a spoon, John?
Yes, I have a spoon. Nobody else uses sugar, probably. Just dump some in here, Faith.
Say, what day did Edwin die? Sunday or Monday?
Sunday night, I think. Monday night.
That's Saturday. Somebody ran into him over at that little store across from Kirkwood. And he was buying groceries. And he got his bag. He said he reckoned he'd get them out to the store. His and the grocer's his arm had been fading him for a day or two. And the grocer offered to take his out there for him, and he wouldn't hear to it. I don't know who it was I heard say that, but it wasn't anything sudden. It was. That's something he knew all about.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm never sure in cases like that whether it's really a kindness to the people who are dear to you that they don't know this, so that when it does happen, it is a shock to them, or whether they it's better not to have them worry all the time when they know that this is the situation and the possibility attached to it.
Well, Edwin's friends knew it.
Well, I couldn't help thinking the last time I was there and saw them 3 years ago what a pity it was, although this of course is a very individual matter, that he shouldn't have retired then and had 2 or 3 years anyway. Of course, this might not have happened too if he had gotten away from such tensions as there are.
Oh, they're just places full of tensions now, John. I don't think they were before. I don't think it's my changing point of view. I just think there's more tensions. You don't think so?
Well, quite possible.
I mean, there's so much. You see, there's so much going on, for one thing.
That's the way some people like it.
No, I don't. I mean, they you don't have a choice. I mean, it's just like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how it is up there, but down here, it takes energy just to sit there.
Well, I got so bored with faculty meetings last year, I stopped going. Well, I just cannot listen to this drivel any longer.
Well, way back when we knew John in the University of Tennessee, he was about the most independent thinker.
Did I do any thinking at all?
Well, what passed for thinking?
Now, what am I to make of that? Well, I didn't please the powers that were at Tennessee at that time.
Well, the thing about it is, you didn't care much.
No, I didn't care.
And, you know, I never could quite understand why Roscoe took it with such a high spirit.
Well,
with all of his gifts and everything. Stay there,
yeah.
If he'd wanted to stay.
Kenneth told me a very nice thing, maybe you know it too, that the Hodges will leaving the income from the, I don't know if it was just the handbook, to the department has brought in quite a lot of income to them, and the department has given both Roscoe and Alvin Thaler $1,000 a year out of the Hodges fund. Which I thought was very nice.
Roscoe and Al and Thaler.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised that Roscoe would accept it.
Well, I didn't know that.
Well, I don't think the Parkers have had too much. I haven't from what Kenneth tells me, that neither one of them had very much retirement benefit, actually. And well, Kenneth, I guess, told me, too. He said Parker's dashing off to Europe, as they did this summer. It surprised everybody a little bit. And all Roscoe said was that they had had a...
A windfall.
Windfall.
That's right. He did say that, yeah.
It had what?
A windfall, and they'd been able to go to England again.
You mean the stock market?
No, I don't think so.
This is probably this.
It could be this $1,000.
Well, you know that little pitiful retirement gets less and less every year.
Quite. Mm-hmm.
Wasn't much to start with, did you? Money goes down.
Well, my TIAA and CREF is paying me just about a fourth of what I was getting for salary. They're telling the instructors coming in now that their retirement, if they stay in the system all the time that they're teaching, up to 65, will probably pay them about 60% of their final salary. But nobody that's retiring now is getting anything like that.
Well, they work Social Security in on it, too.
Well, see, we weren't under Social Security in Tennessee in our day. I didn't get under Social Security until I went to work the year after I left Tennessee. So that I've been in it, was in it just since 1945.
Well, that's what I mean, but...
Well, that's enough, isn't it?
Well, I'm getting more Social Security than I expected to. And you sent help to these guys, too.
I never heard you talk like that.
Well, what's your chief expense, John?
Coins, probably.
Huh?
Coins, probably. Although I don't add up anymore to see how much I'm spending.
And dentures. Don't forget that.
I'm going to have to write Kent. I don't know whether I'll tell him how much they cost me or not, because I think I told you before. I told you when I was there in Knoxville that I had told my nephews that I was going to leave them my share of our grandfather's estate. But I was going to leave the rest of my worldly possessions anyway, anywhere I wanted to and so forth, and that I was going to spend my income from now on. So there's going to be no more accumulation. Did I tell you this?
No. Said,
what in the world are you going to spend it for?
Kenneth said that.
I was telling the Parkers, and Roscoe said, well, that $500,000 you got for those orange groves, he's going to have some trouble spending the income from.
Kenneth, this is so much money.
Well, before the stock market, while I was there, he'd never talked quite so freely about financial problems as he did this time. Well, I took it he was really in big finance now.
Yeah. You know, he has to put in a good part of his day on the finance.
Well, he subscribes to all kinds of journals, which tell him things.
Yeah.
Roscoe told me, too. I said I don't have any idea what Kenneth is going to do with all this after Roscoe told me what he thought he had got from these orange groves. He had three or four orange groves in the Orlando. He's from Orlando, in the Orlando area. And he sold one of these 2 years ago now. Roscoe thought he got $1 million for it to begin with, but that had been toned down to $500,000 this year. And there are two others he still has. There, this the same sort. And Roscoe said, "Knows what he's going to do with it. Hates all his relatives." No, I said, well, he didn't tell me. That's all he was going to dispose of. So I said, I can't tell you.
He doesn't have any close relatives anyway.
I don't know. I couldn't remember. What is,
he doesn't have any sisters or brothers.
No, he was an only child. And I've never heard him talk about any cousins.
Or aunts or uncles. What is he going to do with it, John?
I don't know. I have to ask Roscoe.
He ought to have a foundation.
Yeah.
We could bring the thing.
We could organize it for him.
Gladly.
And put out grants and then get an income, a royalty on whatever comes in from the grant.
I don't know.
Fair?
I don't know. What? Did Hodges leave something to the university as well as to the English department there? Do you know?
John, I'm sorry to say I have no idea. I have heard various stories, but I am talking about it. No.
Well, they're naming the undergraduate library for it. It made me think that he must have left something to the university, too.
I believe, maybe Roscoe said it, or maybe Francis. I don't know, but it seems to me that he did.
He wrote the Harbury's Handbook, using all the efforts which people like Guy and myself had done. He went through millions of themes. Took all down all the things that we had written on them and the marks we'd made and so forth. Made up this handbook. I don't know whether we ever used it at Tennessee or not.
Used it everywhere else.
Well, the Army adopted it. And he sold millions and millions of copies of this thing and made millions of dollars apparently on it. But he left all of the copyright ownership to the English department there in Tennessee. So that it's been a real windfall, they can buy almost anything they want. So maybe Kenneth can do the same thing. I'll see if I can put a B in the spot next time I see him.
John, do you get a copy of the Tennessee Quarterly?
Oh.
Well, I've got a copy of it ever since it started, and I never gave him a nickel.
White-haired boys, that's all.
Yes.
You must have done something else for them. When did it start?
When? Oh, don't ask me that. 20 years ago.
In your time?
I don't know. I guess I was still around up there.
Oh, it's after mine, I'm sure.
Is that what they call it, Tennessee Quarterly?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Well,
I don't think I've ever seen a copy.
It's nice, you see. They get it out. And a lot of nice things in it.
I guess Kenneth has sent me a couple of off-prints of things that he's written. And as a matter of fact, he got me to read Death in the Family, which I did this winter, which I never read before. He had a very nice article on tracing the Knoxville landmarks and families that A.G. used.
Oh, he did?
Mm-hmm. Very nicely done,
Arnold. Well, I wish I had one of those. I didn't see it. I don't know where it would appear.
Sure, I have another copy. I'll see if I can remember to dig it up. He sent me one, and then I got one from someplace else. I'm sure I have two. But he did some very nice research in showing that A.G. had really used the actual physical background, and that some of the families can be identified with the Knoxville family.
Yeah. That's a right remarkable little saying, wasn't it, the book?
I tried to finish War and Peace this winter. I started it before I left Galesburg, and I'm in book 12 out of 15. I may make it by in a year, and I'm having very great difficulties keeping going. I cannot get interested in the characters. I just sort of plow on to that.
Best thing I've never read War and Peace, but the best thing I ever heard about reading it was my sister had to read it, and the copy that they bought had a bookmark that had all the characters and all their three extra names, their nicknames, and their double names listed, so that as you went through the book, you had them all listed on the book on the bookmark.
I've had to do that on my own for Anna Karenina, which I've taught 3 or 4 times. Now just make this out and have the students put it in their book. This was the trouble. I have a set of Tolstoy. I had a very tragic experience. I thought this is one of the things I've got to read, and I've got the book right here and so forth. And only the first volume has this in. Well, I got into the third volume of it. I thought, oh boy, I'm really making progress here. When I went to get the fourth volume, which I thought was the final volume, I discovered there were 6 volumes, and I was only halfway through. But I had to keep the first volume out there for a while to keep these people all straight. But you get acquainted with them as the thing goes on. I'm far enough along now so that I don't have any trouble remembering who was who. Damnable Russian names.
Well, let me tell you, I like to use these little case books if I had to figure those things out for you. And, I have one of Faulkner, and one where he doesn't finish his sentences or else makes them so long, you know. And it helps you out there. And I figure they've already labored at it. No use my laboring through it again, is it?
No, if you've got it there, it's all right.
Yes,
yes, but
yes.
If you don't have it there,
and
then
you know, a lot of times all you need is a couple of pages, and it saves you all that. So where is?
Well, I've got through the Battle of Borodino and the burning of Moscow. If I can just get all these characters settled down now to their unhappy ending, I'll be all set. That was one of the projects I was going to do that fall and didn't get through with it.
Well, why are you run behind schedule?
I don't know. Too many other things going on.
I just can't
make myself do it.
You can't manage your own time?
No. It just takes over.
Somebody is always putting a foot in the door. What they're doing? What's happened to you?
No. Lethargy. Old age.
John?
Incompetence. Something.
So I heard the amount of work you have to do expands to fill up the amount of time you've got to do it in. You stretch a postcard writing it all day long.
Well, you know,
I found this fall, this winter, that what little creative urge I've had, which has never been very much, I had a couple of projects that I thought I'd get going on that I just didn't get around to getting that final push to get started on them. And then I got off onto these craft things, which is taken up my what little creative urge I have, so that I haven't done any writing this winter at all. Worked on my corner.
Well, now you announced when you went through here that the writing was on your list.
Mm-hmm. That was.
You didn't say anything about the crafts.
Well, I didn't have any idea then that this is what was going to. But like
a little switch occurred.
I was just like all these other old women in Miami. I found I had to have something to do with my hands when I got through using my brain.
Yeah. Why don't you come out here and yell at my cow a little?
I couldn't do something with my hand.
You can wave them out.
Can you wave them out?
Oh,
yeah.
Get results.
Well, I don't know about
sometimes.
That.
I've hooked too rough.
Well, now they were having a picnic while ago. You see, all the calves and that little baby calf were just racing around. You ought to have seen them. I didn't want them calves racing because they'll lose weight. You know, that's what you do with beef cattle. You don't want it to be supple and sinewy.
Low and ponderous.
Yes. Heavy on the feet. But they do love to race. Stick that tail up and away they go.
I suppose I could have a drink of water in my glass.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
You could.
Well, that's all we got.
Golly,
we're through.
Yeah.
What more do you want?
Well, we just raced through. What happened?
We didn't have the news on.
We didn't have the news, John. You see, we don't start talking until after the news. We just sat here and scrape and rake and swallow.
Well, it's nice to have your routine interrupted every once in a while so you don't fall into a rut.
But I'm going
to
tell you.
It doesn't get to be much of a rut.
I'm going to tell you, I'm glad to be interrupted. On that news. Oh, it ain't the rut, it's the news. I just get so much of it, I just wonder why I even turn it on.
I tried to find something in the Ocala paper last night about the murder of the governor of Bermuda, but there wasn't a word as to whether they discovered anything or made any progress with that.
Yeah.
Really, this assassination of officials around the world is frightening.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. You all just take a little turn around the block, and we'll come back in and see what we can drum up. I don't know. They can't set long, John. They get fidgety.
They might fall into one of those ruts outside, though.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what. We'll take John on a walk.
Yeah, take him down the water.
Okay, John, this is our...
We've got full moon tonight.
Oh, good.
Almost.
And then we'll come in for
moonlight
session.
Magic.
Yeah, and by that time I'll wash the dishes. I'm the dishwasher.
Told you, John.
Yeah, that's right. I have the distinction of being the dishwasher.
John invited us out to dinner tonight, and I told him, nope, got a dishwasher here.
That's right. You can't.
You got your walking shoes on, Jared?
No,
John?
I better put my...
We still got just a smidgen of daylight.
Yeah, put your shoes
just
on.
Just a smidgen.
They're nice to walk, though, isn't it?
Shoes as can be. It's just as cute as we can be.
John.
Yeah. Walking Roscoe. Walking Roscoe.
We're
good. Yeah.
I think I've got the right balance. Mm-hmm.
Got you and Rick going and open one of John's windows. He's going to suffocate tonight with that here.
Don't.
Oh, do I have to do it right now?
No.
Now I'm going to take one of these back here. I made 9 for you, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And you can have your choice of setting for them too. I bought these in St. Petersburg. I found a tiki store there. I need a tiki. Garden, revival.
You mean I have my choice?
You have your choice, yes.
Oh.
Let's see what we've got here.
Well, you should know which one should go.
No, I deliberately didn't select. I put shells on some of these and then on others.
What would you say, Daddy?
Is that supposed to be a snapdragon? The long one?
No, those are delphinian.
Delphinian.
See what that would look like in there.
Which one?
That
Which
one,
one
in there.
This one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, some of the openings are large ones. You're going to have to stuff them with cotton batting or something to hold the pieces up, I think. I started off with all laces like that, and they don't hold too much. And there should be some greenery here somewhere, too.
That's a little bit strong, right?
Yeah. John. John. Ow. Now you see some of you. You want to be careful, John.
mess them up.
Well, they have, some of them will shake off a little bit and have to be.
That is a pretty one, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's got all that color in it.
At that shell shop north of Leesburg. Have you noticed that at all? That's right on the Fourth Friday month. They bought some stuff yesterday and got a couple more ideas. There are supposed to be a couple of green pieces to go with it. I don't know what I did with those. I thought I had them on the last thing.
I don't use this one.
I was going to make another one for my friends in North Carolina, and I never got around to it.
John. Are you sure you don't want to write here? I'm afraid you're spreading these out too.
Well, those were experimental ones. They didn't come out very well.
Okay. Well, those are shells too.
Yeah, they're all shells.
The little parts
mm-hmm.
shells. That's kind of clever. I had no idea that the little brown things were shells.
This is my friend in Largo. She gave me this, and I took the base over to her. Beads. See how all kinds of things decorated with beads. Now, these are shells from, those are all bought shells.
Yeah.
One. But these are shells from Sanibel.
You didn't do them.
Yeah. These are part of my winter occupation. That I was much disappointed in. I thought those, we searched and searched to find those shells with a little bit of yellow in them.
Uh-huh.
It didn't turn out very well. This, I made one of these for a friend, too. Okay.
Oh, yes.
Faces were just the right size. I've got to try some sort of plastic on those stems and see whether the stems are too wobbly.
We'll
you could pick these in your own backyard. You don't have to have them made out of shells.
We'll find an app.
You get them in the dark.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Oh, gee, Willikin. Well, what do you know?
My shell teacher over there in Santa Fe. When she saw these, said, that's cheating. You're supposed to make the stems and the leaves, too. These I did myself. But I said to her, now, when I can buy one of these plastic things for 10 cents, I should spend all my time making them. She didn't approve of that. Well, Faye, I'll have to look. There are pieces of greenery.
Well, I don't want to be without greenery,
that,
John.
That go with those, and they help to stuff the.
Mm-hmm.
Those you just poke in any way you can.
You're
going to
give me these?
Yeah, all those are for you.
Oh,
this
is you're splurging.
Well, she'll probably give them away for a bridge prize, but then I have made the gesture.
That goop tonight that I gave you isn't worth this. That's a safe estate.
Yeah. Well,
I didn't know such things could be done.
Oh, well, you just have to live and learn, Guy. This world is full of things never heard of before, you know.
John says you have to use your hands, man.
Where do you get on to all that?
Well, this Sanibel is full of people like this. All just gorgeous things they do with shells. They have a black pearl shop has a mirror about like that with a border about like this with shells all around. And then they make pyramids out of these. My sister calls them Victorian monstrosities that she wouldn't be seen dead with. But this mirror is for sale at $200, and some of these pyramid things bring $80, $90 for.
Oh, really?
They take a long time.
And John, I don't need. You don't want to give me all of these, but you need some of
those. Yeah, there were two
I've
with
got
shells
two.
On. Yeah, those
yeah.
are the right
mm-hmm.
ones.
Yeah.
I didn't put shells
mm-hmm.
on.
Shell okay.
On. I'll just have to look for
With as much time as you could put on them, you wouldn't live too well on that, right?
No. Well, those the little bouquets of that sort that they have around various places, they sell for $6 and $7 usually,
mm-hmm.
something of that
mm-hmm.
sort, and they don't take really any time to do.
Well, mm-hmm. they don't.
Mm-hmm. No.
And people buy them too.
Oh yeah, they sell like crazy. These are larger ones that haven't been mounted yet.
Good Lord.
Look at that.
Well, what do you know?
Look at that.
Those are cat's paws. Those are gar scales.
Mm.
Those are orange blossoms.
And you color them?
No. The coloring process, this is a very strange thing. I bought these first colored pieces at this black shell place in Sanibel, and I thought they colored their own shells. This very good friend of my sister's works there on weekends, and Mrs. Chase had come in and given me a lesson or two on what to do, a little booklet and so forth. And I understood from her that she did the coloring of the shells themselves. So when I found this shop in Miami that had colored shells, one shop in all of Miami had colored shells, I said to the woman, "Do you color your own shells?" And she said, "Oh, no, we have to buy all our colored shells." And I said, "Well, I bought some on Sanibel, and I thought they told me there that they colored their own." And she said, "We have never found a way of dyeing shells. We've tried everything." And she said, "We even wrote the DuPont people to ask about what kind of an aniline dye of some sort might do to produce these colors." And she said, "They couldn't tell us anything at all." So when I was back at Sanibel the next time, I said to Nedra, "I thought you colored your own shells." And she said, "Oh, no, we have to buy all the colored shells. We can't color them ourselves." So it's the wholesale place is apparently in Bradenton, and so far as I was able to find out, nobody knows how they get the colors in these things. But this place there at Leesburg has just jars everywhere, and I didn't get a chance to ask the woman whether they colored their own shells or not. I need to show the meeting. I just packed all these things very quickly to get them where I can get at them again when I want them. I made 3 or 4 of these. Gave my dentist one of these. I said, "I think you want some antique bones along."
John, what were you doing in law school? You were doing some sort of handwork in law school. You always were.
I've got some more handwork out there. Do you want to see my rug?
Well.
You got something else?
Well, I can't. Have you got something you want to do?
No, I'd like to see your rug.
We'll get them done.
We leave this here, somebody's going to put an elbow on them, though.
Yeah. Well, we want to take these, and John, let's put them all back right now.
We're pretty rough.
Yes.
Boy, when you get started, there's just no stopping.
Now, don't just pile it in, John.
No, come out again when I get up to it.
I hope I'm doing these all right. I'm just rolling
them up.
One layer.
Now, John, look, here's these.
Yes, put my elbows in. There. Fairly substantial. Why don't you wrap up my... This was the first one I did, and I didn't realize until I got well along when I had a little nick out of it.
And,
here or there.
You're pretty as here.
Well, have you done them enough that you can do it with...
I can be professional?
Speed?
I tell you. They're not really as hard. The trouble, the little ones are really no difficulty, but these larger ones, you do them, you know, you take a glass and you use transparent plastic, what do I want to say? You wrap food in.
Saran wrap.
And you put this on at the proper concave
mm-hmm.
so that the shells will all slide together and stay there. And this is quite tricky because it depends upon the size of the shell, how much depth you have in this thing. And of course that miserable stuff sticks to the glass, so you have to keep pulling it up and putting it down. And it's this glue is fast drying and it's flexible glue. It's very good. But some of these things were really an awful loose. That one I had a terrible time with. I couldn't get it to stay at all. Some of these were a little bit easier. But the larger the shells, the more difficulty there is in making them stay in place long enough to be there permanently. These things you can make pretty much flat. And these roses, all you have to do is hold up these with your fingers or toothpicks for half a minute and they'll stick all right.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the things you can do pretty much flat. I don't know what flowers these are. You'll have to name. That's supposed to be a poinsettia. It doesn't look like a poinsettia.
Mm-hmm.
Now that you say it.
Now that you say it.
Now that you have it identified. You chose the blue vase, didn't you, for your...
Rick did the one.
No, Rick.
Rick said put the blue one in, and I did, and it looked fine.
If you don't like it tomorrow, you can blame it on him. That's a good
That's
idea.
Right.
Now, Guy, I didn't bring anything for you unless you want a copy of my book of plays. Did I ever send you a copy of those?
Mm-mm.
Well, you'll have to have a copy then. That's all there is to it. Stuck with it, whether you want it or not. I dug one out of my box of books yesterday because I couldn't remember whether I'd sent you
one.
I sent them.
You mean you're not going to give me a rub?
I'm going to let you look at my rub. You'll have to start one yourself.
What kind of rugs are they? Are they rayas?
Hooked. Well, I certainly appreciate this.
Well, I'm
especially
sorry.
Since John
what
made
I,
it.
What I did with those pieces of greenery, I have another box of shells out there. I'll look at that.
Well, you just... You
they're just pieces from 5 and 10 cent plastic flowers, but they fitted in with this sort of stuff, like small leaves. Can you smell these? Some of them are very smelly. Mine's just a boil.
Well, we ought to do something about that smell.
Well, if you can get rid of it, that's the thing.
Oh, you mean it already has a smell?
Yeah.
Bring in that flashlight. Mm-hmm. Oh, it should be just right here.
I may need it.
No, not quite.
Is that a rug?
I don't
know. Needlepoint.
Oh.
John has always done things. I was amazed.
You know, that little light there blinds me. I don't know what it does to you.
He was looking at that's much better this way.
Yeah, I think
yeah.
He's seeing
better.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Oh, I'm warm.
I'll tell you. Got his needle in, I think.
Introducing me to one of his dogs this afternoon, and I'm standing there. He says, "Now don't move. I'll stay between you and the dog. Don't move." So I'm standing there, you know, and the dog's smelling around at my foot. And Mr. Weaver says, "Watch out, he don't bite you." I jumped about 10 feet, and the dog jumped 10 feet the other way. I said, "Mr. Weaver, your dogs don't bite." He said, "No, they don't bite. You do though."
He said that.
he didn't.
Well, now we'll see which you like better. There's been a great deal of controversy as to the merits of these two.
Can I help you? Oh!
Yeah! Spanish motif. Now this is done with that leopard hook, one that has a little, have you seen those?
No.
They knot. Make a knot. The fingers grill. Until I have that hook out, I can show you how it works.
No, I've seen it.
There are 20,000 spools in that. And I cut all that yarn myself.
John.
You can buy it all cut 2.5 inch lengths. You know, those 2.5 inch pieces there. Yeah.
Why, John?
But I thought I might as well buy the yarn and cut it myself. I want something to do with this one. I'm doing it for. That was a printed design.
Oh.
And all you did, I was to fill in. This, my artist friend designed for me. Gave it to me for Christmas. This isn't done yet.
My goodness. And this is a different kind.
Yes, this is the old fashioned hook.
Yeah, that's
the
crochet hook.
Yeah. Now, those colors stay bright like that?
They sure. This is amphibious yarn. They better. It's expensive yarn.
Yeah.
Do you know the Lee Ward shops? And all the big craft shops, they've got a dozen.
Just don't know a thing about
this. Well, there's
shop.
An enormous one in Elgin. And when I was up at Schaumburg, Chicago, well, when I was up there in Elgin in September, I got the design for the other one there. And then when I was up at his friend's in Schaumburg at Thanksgiving, his mother was buying some stuff, and she helped me pick out the colors, although Fred had indicated what kind of colors to get for this when he outlined what the design was going to be. My sister doesn't like this at all.
Well, I think
garish.
I think this is fascinating. Debbie would like this.
Yeah, I know
what's happening. Well, what's wrong with your sister?
Well, my shell teacher didn't like it either. She, it's quite different by natural light.
Yeah.
I had part of it, this in when I was over except in February. And I didn't like it at all. I thought these two colors didn't go together. And I was going to move this. So I'm going to put the orange in here after I got back to, Carl Gables, and then decided there wasn't enough difference, so I took that all out and did it as Fred had originally designed it. But this looks quite orange in normal light.
Mm-hmm.
The tones are so much alike in artificial light that they don't show up. But that's really quite a gorgeous color in the sunlight.
I like that.
I wanted these two colors reversed, but Fred wouldn't have that. He said you want something that sets off the brighter colors by this deep red. I don't like these borders. And I'm going to wait till I get back and have him look at it. And unless he thinks there's something very special about them, I'm going to take those out. Just have a single line here. So I'm a bit garish.
Oh, that's right. It is just a little heavy, isn't it?
Well, now you talk about something expensive when you see these things in the stores.
Well, now, is that heavy?
Well, it's not as heavy as the other one.
I don't mean that. I mean that border there.
No. This one I don't think is too bad. These two I don't like. I changed the design somewhat. He didn't have these two colors here. I think they're coming off out of gold in the middle. And then I enlarged this orange here.
So it really isn't his design,
well,
after
it's
all.
It's
sort of an improvisation.
Now, my friend in Largo, one of the bee things,
well,
okay,
about,
she has a design Fred made for me, and she's going to make a crochet throw.
Well,
you see how I spent my evening after I spent my days in the library or on the beach.
Oh, this is we're real pleased to know what you've been doing.
Oh, Yeah.
Well, I thought I had to have something to do.
Fine. I'll tell you what, John. I'll get the chair and watch you do it. And that'll be all the exercise I need.
Maybe if we start rolling from that end.
You
want
to roll it from here?
This is going to be for a wall hanging, I think, quite a long time. This was featured in an ad in the Miami paper last week.
Oh, really?
They had a patio room of some sort with this Spanish design on it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
All right, now that's all my treasures now.
Well, don't take them all. We might want to see them for breakfast.
Did you approve of my pilot?
Yes. Yes, I approve of your pilot.
This may have quite a time, but I took this over. I had done the beard and this part of this, and there are 29 colors in this. And I took this over. There's a little notation up there. They're all by number. They're not labeled in any way. And we spread them all out on the floor, and Mrs. Chase and my sister and I were around trying to decide which of these shades is which. They both threw up their hands and said, "Why did you ever start on that?"
So I got no help from that.
Well, now, do you know colors enough to follow things like that with Phoebe?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think so, a little bit.
You see, her family paints, you know, and she's been with her a bit, and she has a feeling for colors. I don't have it. Phoebe just paint them black and blue and gray. Well, I'm concerned.
What? Does nature do to you? These greens and these pinks and these violets?
With all these cows, I don't have a chance, John.
You know what color they are, anyway.
You know what color I'd like for them to be. Just knock them down. Run out. You don't do this all the time. You just take this for spells.
Well, I hadn't done any of this until this fall, this winter. I think when I got down there and found I could do just so much in the library, and with this tooth situation the way it was, I didn't really want to go out in the evening, and I didn't want to work on the book any longer, and I hadn't got back on these shelves because I hadn't been over to Sanibel then, but I had bought this Spanish design rug in September and had started working on that. Then I did a pillow, too, with cruel stitch of some sort, which I left with an artist friend and put into a pillow for me. We hope it'll be ready when I get back, although he's about 6 months doing anything.
Well, you don't want to come down here for one and have to go back north and rest up. It looks to me fairly energetic, doesn't it?
That's my Pompano Beach friend said. The rest of us just sit around, watch TV, and read the newspaper. And I said, well, I've got to have something more to do than that. So this is the result.
You don't watch TV, Tom?
I don't have one.
Well, you can have this one.
The man came a couple of years ago to see whether he could put in cable TV, and he got started on this, and I said, I'm awfully sorry, I don't have a TV set at all. And he said, you don't have a TV set at all? And he said, you're one of the four people in Galesburg that I know of that doesn't have a TV set. Well, I said, I write books, and I can't write books and look at TV. So.
That's the truth. Now, you see, at breakfast, I watch that Today program.
And my friend does that. Herb Andrews.
And you know, but it cuts into your morning.
Mm.
And sometimes it's worth it, sometimes not. But whether it's worth it or not,
You do it anyway.
No. Well, yes, but it still, you know, is that much on your shoulders. I don't care how good it is. It's still that much on you, John.
Mm-hmm.
Like you say, it cuts down on your creative energy. I don't have much of that.
Yes, as John, you know, we were saying, just right around this table, the Parkers were here. Some of the best talk I ever heard from Roscoe was right here.
That's right, Faye. Mm-hmm. I'd forgotten that.
Mm-hmm. Coldest night of the year.
Yes.
Now he's very droll, and he wants to be.
Still is.
Yeah, he got gruffer and gruffer. And as I say, he hears less and less, so that conversation is a little bit difficult. When they were over there for lunch, Ella didn't try to talk to him at all. She was, and Kitty were sitting on the couch, and I conversed with Roscoe, and I found just talking with him alone. I hadn't noticed it quite so much when I was at their house, and the conversation was going round and round, but he wasn't hearing everything I said at all. And I have a tendency, I know, to shout at people if I know they're the least bit deaf. And I thought I was shouting, but he wasn't hearing me.
I heard Ernest Cox. He used to sit in the office there when he was a dean and leave his door open. And I walk in every now and then. And he talked about one of the nicest things. I never really associated with Ernest. You know, I always wave at him. And he and Roscoe fished. Mm-hmm. And they'd go out for a fishing trip. And this time, he was still principal of a school. Up in Bristol, up in there. And his father or his brother had a new Hudson. And Roscoe pulled up there in his old car, and his brother looked at it and spoke sort of deliberately, and Ernest could go like him. And he didn't want to, you know, offend anybody. But Roscoe caught on right quick, he said, and he reared back and laughed. And he said he would be glad to take that new Hudson car on those curves. And he had on some leggings from World War I, some of those little things like that. And Ernest was right there, you see, and he tells those things nicely. I didn't realize this how nicely he did it. I tell you what, I got scared off. I'm easy scared. They talk about Ernest going on a trip in that car and never getting his foot off a 90, you see. And just the thought that I might accidentally be in that car with him sometime, just I just don't even walk down the street with him.
Ernest was Roscoe's, one of Roscoe's students, and he fishes with him.
Well, Ernest was in graduate school with
me.
Is
that right?
Yeah, we were in North Carolina together, and I never knew him in the academic world afterwards. Oh, I suppose I saw him in an MLA meeting, something of this sort, probably. But after he got into teaching, I had any contact with him again. But I used to hear about him from Roscoe.
Yeah.
Now,
well,
where is he now?
He's retired, and he's up there in town. Mm-hmm. He just retired this year. He had arthritis. I think it took some of the pleasure out of the ball game.
Quite a group of Tennessee people went to Florida, wasn't there?
Yeah.
But Roscoe, I always think Roscoe rather talk about his days when he was a captain.
Well, I haven't heard too many of those. He likes to talk about former students that he had, and always assumes that I'm going to know all about them for some reason or other. Some of them long before my time there at Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. That's he was at Tennessee longer than I realized.
Well, I was at Knox much longer than I had any idea that I was going to be. I went to stay for a year and stayed 27.
Miscalculated.
Now, when the notice came through of the job there, after I
left Tennessee. I said, I'm never going to teach again. I'm so sick and tired of students. I was in the Army program there those last years, and I never had any summer vacation in either 43 or 44. I had taught 24 months right straight on through, and I was just sick and tired of the whole business. So I said, this is it. I'm through with teaching. So I got a job in a bookstore in Buffalo, hometown, making more money than I'd ever made teaching. And this is right after, in September, right after the war had ended, and my parents had taken off for a New England tour. They hadn't been away in the car because of the gas rationing and so forth. And my sister was, and her husband and son were living at home then, too. And I came home this day from the store, and my sister said, there's a telegram for you with a job offer. And so I opened it, and it was a job at Knox. And I didn't say anything about it. And after dinner, she said, are you going to do anything about your job offer? And I said, well, I don't want to go to the Midwest. And I don't want to go to a small college. I've been to Eastern universities, and I've taught in big universities. I'm not going to answer it at all. Well, a week later, I had a telephone call from this teacher's agency in Chicago. And it was this Knox job again, and they had upped the stipend a little bit. And well, my sister said, well, why don't you go out and have an interview? It won't cost you anything. They'll pay your expenses unless you decide to take the job. So I thought, well, I might as well see what it's like. Anyway, I was weary of saying, no, we don't have that book or that book or that book. And so off I went. And I liked the dean very much. And they had a tutorial system at that time. Every freshman had to take a tutorial course, and you had 8, I think, in groups. You dealt with them individually or as groups as you pleased. And this appealed to me. I never had any contact with this kind of procedure before. So I thought, well, and I was being in charge of the dormitory, which would have been a new experience too. So it was going to be very different from anything I've had before. I'll try it and see. Well, it was a very interesting dormitory experience because that fall of 45, out of a student body of about 550, we had, I think, something like 60 men. About 10% of the student body was male. But we had begun to get the veterans back, and the ones that we got that fall were almost all captains and colonels and whatnot. And almost all of them were discharged medical cases. Some of them had just awful, gruesome experiences in the South Pacific. And we had 3 or 4 of them went completely haywire that year. They couldn't adjust to civilian life. So there were all kinds of particularly drinking problems that I was involved with, getting people to bed so that they wouldn't rouse everybody else and whatnot. But in January, the flood came. And we had problems then with these older men that had been round the world bumming, and all these fresh little freshman girls that were falling all over themselves with these older men, you know, I'm just dragging them apart, trying to maintain some sort of party. Well, it was a very interesting year, and I thought, well, I guess we'll try another one. One went on after another. I stayed in the dormitory 5 years. By that time, the veterans were through, and then I was I was involved with discipline cases of freshmen pouring salt in one another's milk and this sort of thing. I thought, I'm not going to learn a whole new set of techniques of dealing with problems of this kind after what I had with the veterans. So then I built a house and retired to my seclusion.
John, what kind of a house did you build?
It's a ranch-style house, 2 bedrooms.
Right on the floor.
Right on, all on one floor. The big living room, and I innovated a number of ways. I had a bad time because Gillsburg is a Swedish community. There were a lot of Swedes settled there in the 60s and 70s, the Johnsons and the Nelsons and the Andersons and the Petersons, and the telephone book going on like this. And they're all very set in their ways. I had an architect who was head of the art department at Knox, who had some interesting ideas, and we worked these things out. Then the contractor was Swedish, and almost all of the subcontracting work was done by Swedish of one sort or another. And I didn't know until afterwards what a bad time they had. Phil told me, the contractor, several times. They just refused to do things. Nobody had ever built a house with this sort of thing and that sort of thing before. And it took much longer than, and cost a good deal more than I had expected, simply from the way in which the thing was strung out. Well, among other things, I had the picture window put at the back of the living room instead of the front of the living room, so that you look out on the patio in the backyard. Well, nobody had ever built a house like that. You always had a picture window in the front of the house, so you could have a table in front of it and a vase of flowers on top of that, so all the neighbors could see. And I built bookshelves around two sides, around the fireplace and around the front. My mother didn't like that. She thought it was a dark room, and I should have had another window in. But it's a 22-foot living room. And then we had trouble with the floor. It was designed for one of these random width oak flooring, and I have radiant heat. The pipes are all in the concrete slab in the floor, and they'd never done this before, so that nobody knew that you had to put the pipes far enough down in the concrete so that when you nailed the flooring on, you didn't nail through the pipes through. Well, they discovered too late that they hadn't put the pipes down far enough so they could nail on top. So they had, the only thing they could do then was to get a put in a parquet floor. Well, we looked all over the country for a parquet floor. This was in the Korean War, all of the troubles in the bathroom. I couldn't get the fixtures I wanted. Well, nobody had ever laid a parquet floor in Galesburg within anybody's memory. And they put it in the wintertime, January or February, and these things all, they notch into one another. They're 9-foot blocks. So they notched these things all in very nicely with the radiant heat in the floor and so forth. And came May and the dampness and all again going up. Well, it got so bad in the summertime, I went away. I said, I can't stand this. You'll have to do it over. So they had to take the whole damn floor up and put it all down again. And it buckled twice after that. And I had parts of it taken up. So finally, they got it so far. They put it so far apart now that they're in the wintertime when the floor is dry. There are not unseemly cracks, but you know it isn't tightly fit. Springtime, it's all right when it swells again. And it was supposed to be Roman bricks in the fireplace, and nobody'd ever heard of a Roman brick before, so they didn't get the right color for those. And there was a slab mantelpiece to go in, just a solid piece of walnut, which was to be sent into this. Well, I arrived out there one day, and they were building the fireplace, and they had built it right on up, and I said, there's supposed to be a mantelpiece right in there. And they said, oh, where's that? And I went looking at the side. Oh, so there it is. Well, by this time, they put bricks this far up. So they had to yank a row of bricks out and then fake the mantelpiece. It's just a shell, and it's got things in it that would slide into these places and they had taken out. You don't notice unless you rap on it and it's And the fixture in the bathroom was supposed to be green, and they couldn't get green fixtures, and they couldn't get the row of step-in closets in both bedrooms, and they couldn't get the right size for those, and they couldn't finish the plastering until they put the the frame for the sliding doors. And I could go on and on and on, all the problems we had.
Well, did you ever?
You needed just to find out what they could do and do that.
Well, my contractor was very nice. I had put a $14,000 limit. I said, this is all I can afford now. Well, it came to about $19,000 when we got through.
23 years ago, that was the price.
And I said, I don't think I can swing this. My mother had said she'd lend me the money, and I said, no, I'm not going to do it this way. If I can't finance it myself, I'm not going to try it. So my contractor said, well, I'll pay you everything that you've put into this, and take it off your hands. He said, I'll have no trouble renting it. It's interesting enough so that a number of people have been interested in it. But he said, I can tell you right now that if you want to start all over again, this was a year later, that you're not going to be able to do the things that you wanted to do for $15,000 now. So I debated and then sold all my foreign gold collection so I could live in my house.
That was a good bit. That was almost half again, wasn't it?
Yeah. But they fooled around with so many things that they had to do over again because they hadn't done them. Well, the kitchen cabinets all had to be done over. They put those in all wrong. But they, Phil said to me quite frankly, he said, these people doing, particularly the woodwork, have never done any of these things before, and they simply didn't know how to do them. But my architect was very good. He was there a good deal of the time. While this
well, what persuaded you to stay then, John? Oh, you had the house. You didn't build the house, or you
five years ago. Well, I liked the people there very much. It was an interesting faculty.
Swedes and all?
Well, there weren't going to be Swedes on the faculty. And the student body was not recruited from Galesburg. It came from the Chicago suburbs. We were an expensive school. And it had been a playboy school, actually, during the 30s. I don't know how many people have told me, well, even my own students from the late 40s, and we never could graduate from Knox now from the way it's changed. Because we continued up the entrance requirements all the time. So in late years, except for these disadvantaged students that we've taken in, we've had pretty much the upper, well, certainly the upper fourth, the upper tenth of the class with the deals.
And that makes a great difference.
Oh, the student body was always intellectually respectable in every way. We did away with freshman English some years ago, and we don't teach it. We have courses in it for people who